welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And tonight we have another great show dealing with metaphysics and spirituality and science and, well, a whole other slew of things, some of it dealing with political issues and some other factors. But I do think that tonight many people will be interested in the pragmatic issues as well. Not so esoteric as probably some of the shows have been, but there's definitely esoteric factors. And I would like to talk tonight about this world's immediate future, and that for me, I'm talking about the next 7 years. Part of this future is going to end up being a test. And the test is going to involve a number of factors, and I'll get into those. I want to also say that the things I'm going to be talking about tonight, because it's about the future, it's always open to change, open to being wrong, of course, and therefore is somewhat speculative. But nonetheless, it's also based upon elements of metaphysical science in terms of the question of the changes in rays that are taking place at the present time. That's focus of energies in terms of how it affects our senses and the senses of all life on the planet, actually. And then, in addition, we'll be looking at this whole situation in terms of where humanity is and why there may be some kinds of tests, as I suggested, that have been planned maybe for a very long time. And so the tests that we're going through are tests to see whether or not we are going to be able to, deal with some elements of how and what and when and where we can get through our own tendencies towards egotism, selfishness in general, and if we're going to become conscious enough to deal with a civilization that requires higher consciousness for all of life, from human and below, to succeed, and to succeed in ways that is along a godly plan. So these are the things that I'm referring to when I talk about what I'm speaking about tonight. And if this troubles you, then, you know, you can take what I say somewhat with a grain of salt, but at the same time realize I deliberately chose 7 years because I, in my opinion, the next 4 or 5 are going to be very taxing and problematic. And then we may be able to pull the circumstances that are going to cause those problems out of the fire and into a more manageable circumstance from those points forward, leading into what is known as a replacement of emphasis on the base of spine chakra, sometimes referred to as the area of reflection and of being able to balance out spiritual understandings with material, so that the material world doesn't overpower us as much as it has been, with most of the emphasis not coming from that particular sense. That sense has been really in remission since about 1675 AD, so it's been a while. And it's starting to pick up and come back, and as it does, we've become more reflective. We've become more likely to be able to find solutions that come from the balance of our spiritual or thought side of God with our material side, or the functioning and creation of material things that should be helpful towards spiritual, not hurtful. So let's talk about some of this stuff right now. Let me get into some of the meat of what these concepts are about. Well, of course, in the United States here, where I'm talking from, we just had an election. Now, I had suggested that if Barack Obama won, and generally with his agenda, there would be a significant shift during the following 4 years to a less free United States, which would lead to a less free world, with the second ray taking a predominance of effect over the first ray and leading to a greater level of darkness rather than light, because those two rays need to be focused together and balanced. This occurred, and not surprisingly it occurred, but it did occur, and the results are going to be an increased level of emphasis on, we'll say, people seeking to have a harmonious life with less stress, but at the same time, a lack of creation. We're going to see the creative side of society diminish, and the creators in society probably becoming less of a force in the American side of existence. But this may and probably will spill over to many other parts of the world, because the United States is the preeminent country that is both, or has been in the past, both creative and has been a leader. And both of those are going to diminish. Now, they've been diminishing under the last 4 years, but the reason they're going to accelerate and become more of a problem is that at this particular junction, the things that have been put in motion in the last 4 years will start becoming realized. In other words, we've had changes in theory, but not changes as much in action, and the actionable issues will become very prevalent. Some of those are people called Obamacare. It's a kind of universal health care. But it requires, in order to be operable in the way it was designed, it requires eventual rationing, eventual restriction of choices. And the further diminishment of control of people over their individual lives to become a collective. Now, collectivism has some advantages, that people usually don't have to think as much for themselves, and they find it more easier for them to get along on a level that seems at the beginning to be copacetic, but it also leads eventually to a lack of growth and a reduction in the process of people becoming, we'll say, individuals at the same time they have group or soul consciousness. So you lose the individuality. And this is going to be part of what many people will be experiencing worldwide. It is not going to be just a U.S. Aspect. Some countries may not go in that direction, by the way. They've learned maybe lessons about trying this sort of thing. One of the things I think, if you're concerned about what's going to be happening in the U.S., the best possible way to understand this is to keenly observe the state of California for the next 2 or 3 years. You could almost use that as a barometer in determining what will likely occur for the rest of the United States at varying levels depending upon what state you live in. So we can kind of expect that this is going to be an issue. And if we can't plan for this, then there's going to be a greater level of both, we'll say, dissension and issues to be dealt with that may be even further destruction of virtue or light in form. And so we don't want to have that occur if we can avoid it, of course, and that's why I'm talking about it tonight, so soon after a change in the direction of the United States. The weird thing about this is you could say, well, but for 4 years this guy's been president, all we did is just re-elect him. Not exactly so. The first 4 years were a test, so to speak, of whether or not people could see the things that are wrong with the president and his administration. Those things did not obviously rise to the level of being within the senses and consciousness of the people in general. We'll say certainly not enough so that he wouldn't be reelected. And for that reason, there's going to be now a greater impetus in the plan generally of how, we'll say, God creates to allow people to experience the results of their own choices and to become more responsible, even if part of their choices was to remove responsibility from their individual decisions and make it seem in the beginning like they can skate and they can get something for nothing, maybe in some circles. Some people will get that. And so this is a kind of strange circumstance because, unfortunately, I've heard people say this, some politicians did, and other people say, well, it's God's will or God wants this. God doesn't create, in my opinion, create our lives and doesn't choose to make things happen a certain way. Instead, what happens is that people make the choices and the creations, and then they become responsible for the results of those. And that's just the way it works. If it didn't work that way, then yes, we could say we're all puppets in an interesting show, and God is the puppet master, and things turn out exactly the way God, of course, decided and will decide. And I wouldn't want to be a part of that whole existence process myself. But neither would God, in my opinion, because a God like that would be, in some way, at best, entertaining itself. At worst, being bored out of its own existence. So it's not, and it wouldn't wish that kind of boredom on us either. A deterministic God is a God, really, that is dark in comparison to the enlightenment that ageless wisdom suggests. God is. So that's each for each person, of course, to decide. Some religions actually teach a very deterministic God, or at least some parts of some religions do. Those religions usually end up being dark themselves and having a lot of problems. Okay, now, let's look at what all of this means in terms of the general world. Well, the general world, as I see it, and of course you may disagree, has within it a growing, we'll say, state of collectivism. And part of the reason that this is happening is because when there was a stronger element of what we called communism before 1991 or so, and the amount of it was so perverse and so prolific around the world, it wasn't that hard to see it for what it was, which is evil and dark. That collectivism was replaced by a pragmatism about communism, that you can't be so in your face with it, and you've got to make some concessions. So that people don't see it for what it is. And this was enacted by such countries as the Red Chinese, strangely, in our hemisphere, Cuba, and other than the North Koreans, most other communist or communist-leaning countries. So that, in a political sense, dampened from that point forward this whole, we'll say, visibility issue. And then, of course, the Soviet Union collapsed. And the collapse of the Soviet Union brought with it the belief that communism was over because that proved it didn't work and nobody was going to buy that model of it. Well, we're buying it right now in this country, and we're buying at least parts of it right now. And the greatest concern I have is that the whole world may buy a not that modified a version of it for the near future, the next 4 or 5 years particularly, countries like Greece and Spain, where there's a very strong, as it's called, socialistic and leftist leanings, which is almost a euphemism for communism, is in themselves disintegrating. But they're disintegrating in a process in which they still pretend that they are capitalist nations. So it's interesting to understand that this darkness that is around us is still being well hid, because the reputation of calling things as they really are has been completely or nearly completely hidden by propaganda. So propaganda and egotism, which I've talked about in prior shows, has reached such a high level that it's almost impossible for some people to see the most obvious forms of evil, such as from one day to the next, the President of the United States lying, saying one thing, 2 days later, something else, next day, something else. I mean, those kinds of things would have been more caught on by the media and by the general public. Well, the media, unfortunately, has moved very strongly in support of hiding certain stuff. They're part of the propaganda machine rather than fighting it. And that's one of the greatest dangers, because if you don't get information that is not propagandized and hidden, then you're going to be fooled, unless you can find some place to get it. Where you're not, and you have to choose them to avoid the pitfalls of the problem. So we're moving in a direction where the world could become very difficult and dark. Now, what does that mean? Corruption could grow enormously. It already has grown considerably in the United States, but it is at a worldwide level. It could become outrageously bad. And what does that mean? Well, when corruption becomes the norm for people's daily behaviors, pay somebody off to get this or that done, you can't create without corruption, then what you create is always tainted by the corruption and lowered in virtue or light to a significantly less level. So all creation, even though it may not completely stop, becomes creation that in some way is dark or darkened. And that's a very, very dangerous thing, because then you're on the path to a evil world. And we may be facing that for the next few years. One of the elements of corruption is total inefficiency, a lack of responsiveness by government and the other elements that follow government in terms of corruption. So be aware that this is a good sign to look for. And as I said, California may be a great place for us to check in on and see what happens. So it's going to be almost a bellwether. Although I don't think the levels of corruption necessarily in California are leading in comparison to, say, Washington, D.C., but nonetheless, it's an interesting place to look at in general for some of the other parts of what I consider to be a overall lack of freedom and overabundance of, governmental and other means of controlling life to the point where God is going to be focused away from and government becomes the God of people. Remember that in the United States, we have chosen in the past to say that the government is formed by the people, and the rights of the people come not from the government, but from the Creator. If you eliminate the Creator, then the rights of the people come from the government, and the people are formed by the government, and not vice versa. The results are disastrous. Okay, so we have that negative part, which I don't want don't want this show to be predominantly about, because this is not a show to be dooming and glooming about. I've done several of those because I was hoping to wake people up a little bit before the election. It didn't really help, of course. I don't put any stock in what I say to have virtually any significance of such a thing as a national election, much less even a local one. So regardless of that issue, I still do my part, so to speak, because I want to speak as much as I can into what I consider to be the truth, even if it's not popular, etc. I will add some ideas about how, in a political sense, this could be improved upon at the end of this portion of the show, but nonetheless, after the end of this portion of the show. But nonetheless, I want to just touch on the bigger things, then we can talk about some things that we can do, by the way, to try to make things better. Okay, so the other side of looking at this situation is that when things get very bad, and they may, although the challenge is always that evil will raise its head strong enough to like, we could have a dictator here in the United States and lose all elements of what we consider to be freedom and democracy. And that's not impossible. I know it sounds strange to some people for me to even say that, but that's not impossible by any stretch. I think that it may even be planned. But that could happen. But the good news is that if things get pretty bad in terms of people's physical comforts and economics and in terms of the things that they were hoping to get by getting, we'll say, something for nothing or handouts for some, for others just have a copacetic world, what means not going to be very problematic. This is true of other countries, so you can apply this to other countries in the world, too. Then, if things don't go as well as some people who have optimism right now are going to find, then the questioning of one's own prior choices, the questioning of one's, we'll say, level of consciousness, may be the ticket to help resolve the problem. This is how, in my understanding, God's plan works. People reap what they sow. And the results, although somewhat harmful and hostile and dangerous and maybe even fatal with things, is helpful because it allows those that can continue on to change and grow. And sometimes it just requires force. A forceful thing, because we live in a physical world where force rules. It's not like this in the astral or mental world. We're going to find that out when we die from here. But here, it's a difficult place, and force sometimes is the only corrective factor. So force may be the way of life, and it may, for 4 or 5 years, be the saving grace over time. Now, I'm not talking about force from the standpoint of, like, all the people of some political persuasion force other people to have their persuasion or do so. No, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the force on an individual level when people don't want to be individually responsible. That's how you correct a lack of individual responsibility, is you increase the force side of lacking individual responsibility, and people have no choice but either to take greater individual responsibility or experience greater and greater force. And so I see that as a potential good thing. Not like, gee, I hope everybody really has a hard time kind of good thing, but that the long-term results, if they turn out to be that people become more conscious, which means more universally loving, more wise, they express in themselves a level of soul-like, we'll call it second-ray life, and then they at the same time can balance that with their level of creativity. Now, in order to do this in this system, it means that the creators are going to have to be unusually creative, but they may not create for the collective whole. Now, let me explain that. And so you, if you've read or even maybe seen some of the pictures of motion pictures of Ayn Rand's work, this is part of that philosophy. And that is that you can't solve a problem of darkness that is eating away at creation that is light by helping people to create more for the collective. Because when you do that, even though it seems like, gee, they're really loving everybody, trying to help everyone else out, it makes the collective not become aware of their lack of individual responsibility for their lack of supporting individualism and instead supporting a sort of communism or socialism at a minimum. So what takes the place in terms of resolving the problem is that the creators who are creating light have to create in abstinence of the collective. Now, in one of her stories called Atlas Shrugged, what shrugged was the collective. Each person that shrugged the collective, who is a high-output creator, stopped creating for the collective good and only created for the benefit of all other individual creators, but not for the collective good. The result of that was the collective good had no creation, and even evil must have creation. Without there being creation, things die fairly quickly. And so in her society, which was focused on what used to be the United States, the world and this sort of country fell apart, could not function anymore, and could not even feed itself, or couldn't keep people housed, couldn't keep both people in any way livable. And this brought down the system of darkness that had befallen beyond where we are today, but not that far. Yeah. So the results were, we'll say, forcefully destructive. But it forced people to finally awaken. They started seeing the evil. And they started to see the lack of life, light in their life. And they rebelled. And eventually, that was the cure-all, or the semi-cure-all, of what was wrong. So this, a sort of mini version of this very thing, may be our future. I suggest you read, or you could watch the first two new versions of her story, Atlas Shrugged, and then read the third part. It's because I haven't made the third part yet. The third part's more easily readable than the first two with the third, because the first two amount to so many pages and so much verbiage that most people won't be able to tolerate it. The whole book is like over 1,100 pages. So if you just read the third part, if you see the first two movies, you kind of get the gist of it. Yes, a movie is not as great as reading, but most people will find it more palatable. And I suggest you consider that if you want to do it. And the story itself is an eye-opener for some people. So it's worthwhile. And if you don't buy what I'm saying, it's worth reading or watching and reading, because it is a thought-provoking idea, even if you don't believe it. Say, well, I don't believe it. Okay, that's all right. It definitely is thought-provoking, and it puts you on your guard more about things that might go past you. All right, so we have the possibility of the real creators, of the creators who I call real creators, who are creating more virtue, the not in the world, to individually become more creative and help others who are individually creative, but to become more and more ignoring of the collective side of society. And it takes a lot of creation to do that, by the way. Sometimes it may even take things that get around or avoid certain elements of war, because as they do this, the creators do this, the governments try to control them and stop them from doing it, because they see that without these creators, they can't survive. And so it's a kind of interesting thing, but there's no way the collective side of society can ever control the creator, because the creator has something that the collective side has no ability to do anything about. They can kill you, but they can't force you to create. You've got to just be smart enough not to fall in the traps that are involved with it. I can tell you, on an individual level, myself, I'm involved in this. The people I know are involved in this. But that doesn't mean that we all will succeed. It just means that we have a philosophical and a virtuous side that will follow this no matter what. We don't generally fear death, because we know that death is just a change in body from one place to another. And the next world has much less of this force involved in it. The force kind of is strange, because the way to be less forced by the collective side of existence, if it's going crazy and it's not working right, is to become more of a soul, which is the collective side, but more of the soul who only deals with collectiveness on the side where you're helping people become wiser in their giving and more enlightened, and truly serving all, not just some through corrupted means. And so it is that ignoring of that part, but at the same time, it allows a person to get out of the forces. As I said, about the most that someone can force you is maybe to take your life. You might even be able to avoid that, even though they may try. So the interesting part of this process is that it's predominantly here in the physical world. We don't work on it. We're only here for a short time, relatively. And so the people who have a foundation like that don't find it too disconcerting, although it's not even fun. And can usually tolerate the brief time we physically arrive to go into the astral world and know that we won't have to be facing those kinds of issues, most likely, unless you're in the very lowest of the subworld. And that's self-created. It's self-created, so you can't blame anybody else there. You see it that way eventually. That's the good news about the astral world, because it's so segregated. Much more segregated. And that's the reason there can't be collectivism. Although the dark side would love to join the entire astral world to a huge world of collective darkness. Achieving that at the present time. Okay, so here the forces are going to be strong, but they are avoidable to some extent, and when they're not avoidable, they can only harm you to the maximum, which is if you take your life or something like that. And you could say, well, what about my children? I want them to have some freedom. You can do a lot. We all can, to improve upon that. That may mean that you don't have certain assets and values and can't live in certain places, because there you won't be able to, but you can move to states where you could have some different choice in education. You can move out of the country if you have to. If there's certain things that are challenging about your lifestyle, even in quite a few states, there's a lot of place things you can do that would make a significant difference and would improve life here during these 4 or 5 years that I think we're going to be facing the greatest challenges and the most forces. So force can be mitigated by creation. But be aware that it cannot be fully avoided. It cannot be. Now, some people have a fantasy of that, but I don't think that fantasy has a reality to it, because the physical world has energy being the dominant issue, not spirit. And that being the case, you can't rely on saying, I live a totally spiritual life, therefore I will live a forceless life, in which I won't agree with the side of the communal side of selfishness. I won't agree with that. I believe in a communal side of souls, for sure, and I will support that, but I won't support the selfishness on that side, and yet I think I can, in my fantasy, avoid the forces. That will not bear out to be true, in my opinion, based upon the physics. The physics of this world is that energy rules. And when energy rules, when you have darkness, you have force. There's no way around it. That's energy against energy. One kind of energy is being directed by spirit, and a greater amount of energy is being directed by selfishness and darkness, and you end up with forces. And there is no way to avoid that at the present time. All right. So we have some interesting, I would say, unavoidable problems. And yet we can do quite a bit to make change. So that's the good news. Now let me just get into the next 7 years, and then we'll go to break. After the first 4 or 5 years, we'll get through that. And let's look beyond that. If my theories hold up, and if people choose the directions that I suspect they're going to, we will be at a breaking point in about 4 or 5 years. Okay. Breaking point aside, what does that mean? That means the forces are so great that the things that the forces are against and opposing to each other will not be able to survive. So when we consider how this is going to work out, then the world that's being developed in it during the next 4 or 5 years will fail, will collapse. And as long as there are people who are individual creators who still maintain the virtuous side of life and support a consciousness and a love of people on a soul level, then the world will have something to fall back on. So the next couple of years could be a rebuilding of the world. And the reason it might work then and not now is because the third ray element, the dominant of the throat chakra in our senses, will be very diminished. And the basis spine center will become the new center of interest and dominance among many people. The fourth ray will become a dominant factor, and the balancing of spiritual to material will become so strong in people that they will throw out these terrible, terrible forces and will discard the things that brought them about. It could come through revolution, evolution. It could come through a word that has been so kicked around, transformational change. But the bottom line will become a new world that has within it, we'll say, a less egotistical average person. One who, at the same time, has better senses than today on an average, and has an improved consciousness on an average. Now, we're not talking about huge leaps in humanity's consciousness, but even a small fraction may be enough to tilt, balance in the right direction. And that's what I'm banking on. I'm hoping that that could be a result. If it isn't, well, then we got a real bad problem. And the thing that may determine it is going to be the individual creators and them taking responsibility and not becoming collective creators in darkness. Not buying into a system of corruption, not recognizing or by or becoming duped into a sense of, let's say, responsibility for a system that they don't hold to be godly. So those are the things to think about. We're going to go to break now, and when we come back, I'm going to talk about a lot of specifics about everything from what happened in the elections to where we move forward and how to get to the closer elements of individual creation that is virtuous and while maintaining a soul level of consciousness. So we'll come to that after the break, which will be in about 2.5 minutes from right now.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. McFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
We're back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. By the way, I wanted to mention, we do still have some engineering technical problems going on, I believe, on our side, my side of the fence. We're still working on it, so if you hear a lot of crackling and noises, probably not your computer. It's right here on my side. So we're working on it. And I don't think we'll correct it necessarily tonight's show, but hopefully by next week we will get it solved. But I thought changing certain things would improve the situation that has yet to be realized. So more forces, you see. All right. So let's get back to what I was referring to at the end of the last segment, and that is that there's a number of things that I think we have to look at if we're going to be pretty much more able to withstand the forces that are going to be coming, increased forces that are going to be coming in the next few years. And if for those people who consider themselves conservative and I'm not so sure I'm exactly a conservative, but I would put it in this category. For those people who consider themselves conservatives, there's a few things that I've mentioned in the past that I think need to be further thought about, especially if you live here in the United States. Now, this may be for other people who live in other countries as well and have a conservative ideation. Conservatives generally mix together certain religious viewpoints with political ones. And I want to be emphatic about this because I don't think it does them justice or good. It doesn't help to develop a political party or a political platform that supports a specific religious viewpoint, and it contaminates what should be a non-religious ideation. Notice I say religious, not non-God. Non-religious ideation with a severely religious viewpoint that leads many people to turn off the political messages because they're contaminated by these things. I want to name a few of them because I've named them before. I went over them in the last 7 months or 8 months or so because I thought they were going to be an impediment to the people who have genuine, or in my opinion, I'll call them genuine conservative issues, which are more maybe libertarian, because I consider myself probably a bit more on that side. I don't think I fit in any of the names that are applied to people, but we'll talk about that too. All right, so one of the things that I had mentioned was the question about when does human life begin? Not when does life begin, when does human life begin? And I think this is a whole other, you know, it's a different way of looking at the question of right to life. I think there's a right to human life, but a right to life in general may be a misnomer, because in my understanding, as I teach it, human life does not begin at inception. It begins at a point where a human being, first of all, can survive in the form side of its existence. But beyond that, it also has to do with human consciousness is within the form. And that grows from a certain level of being a fetus to being a born child to eventually developing into a fully conscious adult or almost adult human. So we get into these levels of consciousness, and there are some human levels of consciousness that do not apply to the concept of human life. So maybe the right to life movement should be the right to human life. And, of course, I've said this and a lot of people don't like it, but it's something that should be considered because it seems as though a violation of the rights of people who don't believe that there's a human being inside a zygote, which is a fertilized egg. Or even a non-zygote, just an egg itself. And so you end into these questions of, well, what constitutes human life? Now, the right to life people who are fervent about this say, well, if it eventually is going to become human, then you can't terminate it at some point before that because you're terminating the possibility of human life. So there's a lot of logic problems with that. And, you know, that's like saying, anything could eventually become human life in some respects. So you could get to all kinds of crazy ideas. Like a sperm cell could become a human life. Well, that could lead to all kinds of problems. Because they're killed on a regular basis in the body, and so are eggs, female eggs. So you need to have some kind of, you know, challenge to the logic issue that sometimes are employed to look at and try to find a valid reason for one's understanding. If this one issue had been challenged maybe correctly, and understood, then there would have been possibly even a different outcome to the election in some states. But going further, I also suggest strongly that God does not make choices for individual people, for that matter, even for groups of people. God creates a system of freedom of choice. And so to say that God chooses for somebody to become raped and pregnant is a crazy idea. And there were a couple people that said those kinds of things that were running for the Senate from the Republican Party. Now, that's a real wacko kind of a thought process. And even people who were conservative rejected those folks and said, you know, that's just crazy. Why would you think such an awful thing? It makes God into an evil kind of criminal thing. You know, God and the criminal are one, you know. You really end up with a kind of a belief structure. Because if God condones that, and, well, you know, you're getting into that kind of thought process, you know, so people can see right through that, and that kind of belief structure comes from over-deterministic religious viewpoints, sometimes determined by the person's religion. And undoubtedly, in my opinion, coming from these two senators' religious background. But again, if they didn't contaminate their politics with their religion, it would be a better thing, because then that wouldn't have been the problem, right? I'm just using those two people as an example. I'm not chastising them. I'm just using them as examples so we can understand what's wrong with people's thinking about these kinds of things. And then, let me go a step further. I realize that some religions say that certain things like using birth control is not good because supposedly, again, you get a wild hour, you're preventing what could be a natural thing of birth. Again, it's the same right to life issue, isn't it? It should be the right to human life, not right to life. And so it's a goofy thing. I know that the Catholics or some people are into that, but luckily most politicians don't buy into that. But it was still promoted as a kind of construct. The other thing that's really important, I think, to get across in terms of conservative viewpoints, is that conservatives should be on the side of free thinking. Free thinking means we want you all to investigate the truth. Even if we totally believe it's truth, you know, we want you all to investigate the truth. And so that's a very strong element. And I think that that sometimes was overshadowed by thou shalt not. Yes, there is a Judaic part of the United States, but Judaism moved away from the laws of Moses by mitigating them with a God that was less vengeful and more loving. And eventually that turned into Christianity. Remember, Christians were Jews to begin with. So you've got to look at it from the standpoint that religions are far from perfect. And the laws of Moses, not just the Ten Commandments, but so many hundreds, those were for a time when, for reasons outside of the understanding of the people, it was a good thing to do. And you don't eat pork because of trichinosis and other diseases that are transmitted by uncooked versions or less cooked versions of that. You know, there's all kinds of other factors that get into the equation that 3,000 years ago, you know, or actually, 3,000 years ago, it was important, but today it may be not only unimportant, but not relevant at all. So it's a lot of stuff like that that creates the problem. And if you keep religion out of politics, you're in good shape. That doesn't mean that the reverse should be true, that people can't be political and be religious. It's just that you can't, you know, invoke that policy of specifics, right, to what political choices are made. Some other factors that come into play. And get anything that destroys consciousness. There's no question about it. And drugs do destroy consciousness. I'm not in favor of legalizing marijuana or any drug. Yet, I'm also believe that people should have the right to choose what they want to do with their consciousness. So it's a real problem. And the libertarian standpoint, and the strong libertarian standpoint, is that people should be free to do what they want to do if it doesn't cause harm to others. And, you know, the old argument is, well, but if you smoke or you drink and you drive a car, you may endanger others, so you may endanger your family and so forth. Well, you got to have laws against the endangerment, but maybe not laws against the behavior itself, because the behavior itself is to destroy one's consciousness, but not necessarily destroy other people. And we don't legislate consciousness, so there's that's where the line has to be drawn. So as much as I resist supporting the right of people to destroy their consciousness, I think they have to have that right, despite my own personal objection to it, and those that I teach. Definitely, I teach the opposite. But we've got to have a society in which the freedom aspect is as important as the soul aspect of trying to help everybody become more conscious through education and service and charity. Those things are fine, but not government. The other thing that I suggest is smaller government, because smaller government is the only way that individual creation can take place. As government becomes larger, its only reason for existence is to govern, control, and eventually limit people. That's what the first ray does. When it's imposed upon others, that's what it does. So if you use it strictly for individual purposes, the first ray is very creative. Sure. But on a governmental basis, where it's used in a collective basis, it always turns out bad. If it's large, so it has to be small. And you make limited government by choosing to protect and help and serve smaller fractions of society who have special needs and purposes without interfering and, we'll say, controlling large segments, which always leads to darkness and eventually evil. Give you an example. A 17% segment of society that says we want to be taken care of as far as our health care gets into, and that's a percentage now of the total economic factor, becomes a danger. So 17% of the value of the society in terms of economic endeavor controlled by the government is a big, huge danger. And then people say, well, what about Social Security and all that other stuff? Well, that's a different thing. That's a different thing. Social Security is designed as a means for people to supposedly self-insure. Now, the problem is it doesn't work any longer, so there's got to be some other factors involved. Means testing then changes that to helping only those who no longer can help themselves. That's a different issue. So all of these things get into the same thing as size of government. Government needs, on a collective basis, to affect probably less than 20%, and almost certainly less than 20%, and probably less than 15% of the total amount of economic exchange. Economic exchange is goods and services, which turns into people's time and energy. So people's time and energy cannot be controlled by more than 15% of the time, or they lose their individual ability to create. That's my suggestion. For sure, 20. But I think 15 should be a cutoff. And so, and I would rather see 10 because it could be done. But at any rate, in the way that you look at this situation, we have a lot of choices that we can make, and we can change those choices by changing the way we sell, so to speak, to the general population what ideas are of virtuous life. Virtuous life doesn't have to be some austere life. Rather, it could be the opposite. But it cannot be, at the same time, a life of hypocrisy. Of saying, we want to limit this, but not that, and because we have this religious view or that. It needs to have a consistency. And it probably falls more on the libertarian side than on the quote-unquote social conservative side. And this is a bitter pill, and I don't know that a lot of people will swallow it. And I suspect that some of those people didn't even vote. The ones that can't swallow it didn't vote in the last election. It's a real problem. And one which, if addressed correctly, would have changed the outcome of the last election in the United States. And that affects the whole world. So going forward, a number of the things I have discussed need to be addressed. Another couple areas I just want to mention, the question of homosexuality. Those of you who have read what I've written know that homosexuality is a result of how people develop their personality, either in a prior lifetime or somewhat in this one. It's not really genetic, but people who are homosexual sometimes prefer that because then they think they're not responsible and can't change themselves. It's very, very difficult to change homosexuality once you become one. So for all intents and purposes, whether you believe it's genetic or not, I don't know if it matters. But the point is that homosexuals have all, should have, and do, by through God, have all the rights of any other human being. And they should not be discriminated against. Again, this is a religious factor, isn't it? For in any way. Now, if you want marriage to mean something different than a contract between a man and a woman recognized by government, then you can call that social marriage or religious marriage. And then the other you call marriage by governmental recognition. All people who are homosexual should be entitled to governmental marriage and all the rights and responsibilities, et cetera, to go along with it. It's a legally binding contract. They should be able to enter into that contract and to enjoy the fruits and also pay for the responsibilities of it. But on a religious side, it's up to people's religions to decide what they want to do. If they want to say you are no officially by this religion recognizes marriage, some religions might say we don't want homosexuals, and others might say fine, come on in. That's a totally different issue. As far as the government is concerned, the government doesn't have any business here. Just like it has no business about the questions of abortion up to a certain point where you can absolutely positively claim there's a human being. I gave you months of time when that was, and it's pretty far beyond where most people would tolerate it if they are against abortion. So, I mean, this is the problem, that we have to become open-minded and stop being in this way stuck about this thing. Now, I'd like to take it from the other side of the fence, if I might. People that are highly so-called collectivists in their thought processes, they need to recognize that the individual freedoms and rights of people are infringed upon when you demand things like social justice. What is social justice? Well, social justice says that I can take from others. I have the right to take from others because they have more than people who have less. Well, that's like, well, you might as well go get a gun and just steal from people. I mean, what's the difference? The idea of the right to property, which is part of our Constitution, is defeated by social justice. It actually removes that right. Now, I know progressivism purports that as a means towards equality. against the soul, it's against God, but it's hidden from us because we think we're doing the right thing, because it's sold in a bag of goods that you have to look below the surface. You have to have a certain level of consciousness to recognize what's wrong with it. And for a lot of people who are the have-nots, they like it because they'd rather get something for nothing than have nothing and still be forced to either be more creative or get little in return. Now, people who have nothing should be given something, because I believe in the question of safety net because of charity and also because of the concept that, in general, government does have a responsibility not to follow a collective good, but to follow an individual good, in terms of there being a minimum standard that people should be able to live at. That minimum standard should not in any way give them huge amounts of income, but it should give them the ability to not starve to death, not freeze to death, those kinds of things. This makes sense, right? We all can understand that. I don't think there's too many people that would disagree with that. Although some really radical libertarians might, interestingly. So in a kind of strange way, the process that we are in right now is to define what a soul is. And to a lot of people, they do not understand what a soul is. And the journey we're on is to rejoin our soul while we're physically in incarnation. So believe me when I say the struggle that we're in and the forces we're involved in, and it's a major part of that lesson. That's what I mean when I say we're here to learn something new and to be tested on it. The test is, can we understand our soul enough to be joined in it while we function? The soul realizes individual responsibility while it loves on the level of group consciousness. It works with others who are doing soul creations quite well, but it won't work with people who are not functioning as a soul but just want to get something from nothing, or more than they have or should have from their own creations. This is the difference. And I keep bringing this up, but a lot of people still get confused by it. I have conversations with people who absolutely do not get it, no matter how many times you say it. And that's a frightening thing. I mean, I am amazed, because I think it isn't that hard to understand, but I guess if you're living your life already in a way that's against it, that's the antithesis of it, so you live your life to get on welfare or to get free health care or to do something like that, then you rationalize all the aspects of that. And it's difficult to even hear things that I say, because they're against that. And people get pissed off at me, or say, oh, he's crazy. He's some kind of super conservative Republican. That case. And I'm actually not either, but it doesn't matter. That's what they prefer to see in my explanations. Okay, so we're here to really find our soul. There's nothing wrong with that. It's part of the process. Finding the soul means giving up, if you're on the collective side, I'm still talking about that now, it means giving up the idea that we're going to take from the rich and give to the middle class. I don't mind taking from the rich and giving to the poorest, if that would solve that problem, but it won't. We already do that, so it isn't like we're not doing it, in part. And when we don't do it, it isn't because we don't do it because we don't think that's the right thing to do. We don't do it because we squander so much money due to corruption and trying to buy votes from the middle class who don't need that sort of thing. And then there's not enough money for the real poor. And so that's a scary thing, isn't it? Isn't that what's going on right now on the East Coast? Our governments are responding because we don't have any money. Most of the money is being used in a corrupt way, and the remainder is being used people are living dangerous lives. And this is a terrible thing. And society's broken down. There's a lot of looting and other things. But all that is coming because a corrupt government is almost never responsive to a crisis. Almost never. Because it lacks consciousness. It can't plan well enough to do that. All right. But souls do. And souls react very quickly. Well, that's the good news about souls. And for the future, we can look at this as a positive factor. Maybe 6-7 years from now, if there's another crisis in the world, somewhere, sustained hurricane, we'll be there in 12 hours instead of 12 days. And people will be overwhelmed with help. Won't that be something? And the interesting thing is that what's happening on the East Coast is taking twice as long as help came to people with Katrina in New Orleans. It's about 6 days before much was done there. And the thing is that we're not any better off or worse. It's just that the news agencies aren't picking this up because they're supporting the present political regime, Obama and the like, and they don't want to say anything bad about it. Isn't that fascinating? Man, is that strange. I'll tell you. This is almost like everything's upside down, isn't it? Okay, so souls would take responsibility very quickly, and we can see that you can measure a soul by its level of taking responsibility for things that it doesn't have individual responsibility for, but it sees the need and responds appropriately. You eliminate that situation when you redistribute wealth. You actually subvert the system. You subvert the system of charity, you subvert the system of giving in wise ways, and you give in unwise ways, and you deplete resources and encourage corruption. All of those things come from a system of social justice. So it's really social injustice. It's actually criminal redistribution. Criminal. I hope you're getting it. Are you seeing this? I hope so. I don't know. Say these things in different ways, hoping that someone will, I think I got it. I could say it a lot more different ways. I'm not sure that, you know, how much of the audience is going to lose if somebody's going to say, but how many times do you have to say it? Same thing. All right. So, and then I guess, and I want to say another thing on the left side of things that needs to be corrected, so to speak. One of the elements that has become almost, I don't know, an accepted thing, is that if you're far left, whatever, you can be extreme in your protesting, and in some ways even violent, and that's okay. Because after all, the cause is what matters. Well, that's common. Communism says you should use force to change the will of the people. And force can be whatever is needed. Remember what I said about force. Things are getting more forceful. That means that we're getting closer to the communist idea in terms of reality. Well, that's all wrong, too. Just like social justice or injustice is wrong, so is forcing the will through anything other than peaceful demonstrations. Peaceful demonstration is an education. Only an education, never a form of violence or even prevention of movement. Prevention of movement, what does that mean? Well, a demonstration that prevents people from leaving a building, going in a building, driving down a street, walking down a street, flying from one place to another. I mean, from an airplane. Or any other kind of movement. If it's restrictive of movement, it is force, and it proves by its own definition that it is not enlightening. We want to decrease force to become enlightened. Now, if you're demonstrating and you have signs and you give out pamphlets and you talk and people can listen to you if they want to, that's okay. I'm in favor of that stuff. That's cool. Yeah. And I don't mind people, you know, saying, well, we want to spend some time doing this in a location so we can all be together. I say that's all right. But you can't stay there indefinitely. You can't obstruct other people's movements. As long as you can get your message off, fine. That's a form of communication, First Amendment kind of stuff. It's okay. But the violent side of things, like we see in Greece and other places, those sorts of behaviors are not soul behaviors. They are the antithesis of the soul. You won't find people who are souls doing that. And it doesn't matter. So it's important here to realize that although you reach a point where there's a, we'll say, a crossover point of revolution, until you are revolting against suppression and force on the other side, meaning force with force, you do not have a right to proceed in use of force. Now, let's say the other side, whoever they might be, are forcing you. I can be beginnings of the creation of the United States. The English came in, they said, okay, we're going to force you to do this, we're going to force you to do that. Next thing you know, you have a revolution, people are fighting back, right? Well, if you look how that revolution took place, it was pretty much, but not always, a step-by-step process created by the British. And so you could claim that the American Revolution was a real revolution. It was against the forces imposed by an outside body of much greater capability at the beginning of it than the colonists had to fight back with. And so you could claim that's a revolution. And in a revolution, it's war, of course. People are fighting for their rights. But in a different circumstance, if there is no such force, and you go out and you start, quote-unquote, shooting people, burning people down, burning out things, destroying, that's not a revolution. That's an insurrection. And it's a means of trying to impose your will over a relatively peaceful political system. So we can see the differences here, I hope. And people don't, and they get it confused. I understand. But this takes consciousness, folks. And if you're not going to be conscious, you won't be able to follow a means to achieve the goal that you're really looking for. All right, so let me continue on. Both sides, I hope you see, I'm looking at this, both sides of the political spectrum are making some very significant mistakes, I think. And what can we do to solve this particular issue? I mean, there has to be some, we'll say, not just middle ground, but soul levels of function. And probably the best way to solve this is outside of the political spectrum. I don't think government can solve it. People keep saying, well, if we get this government or get that government, it's going to solve it. I don't think so. I don't think that the Bush, George W. Bush, were the best years by any sense. I was, if you listen to my programs, I was almost as much against some of the things that Bush was doing, Bush 2, in comparison to others. President, and I didn't care for some of those things. I was against some of the Clinton things because those are more social factors. Right? Having sex in the Oval Office, you can stop. It's just side of the fence. You know, Bush allowed big government to grow. The things he stood for, he didn't create in his office. He was corrupt in terms of giving things to people that weren't deserved of corruption in office. There's a lot of stuff like that. You know about it. And that's what led to this rebellion against that. Not without good reason. And we went from bad to worse, though. And so we're not really doing ourselves any improvements. It's just the other side, the pendulum swinging too much and going the other direction. Government doesn't solve problems. It is the problem. The answer is education, economy. Economy means creation of means of exchanging goods and services in a way that leads to life. And economy also means the preservation of resources to the maximum level possible. Wasted resources, like trying to make a technology that's 20 or 30 years ahead of us, versus the present-day technology, is silly. But taking the present technologies and making them work better and in less environmentally unfriendly ways, it makes every bit of sense. But we can do these things, and we have the ability. But we do it through education, we do it through work and creation, and we also can do it through, I'll say, freedom. Making people more free will allow us to find solutions. Government is the opposite. Government regulates, controls, and reduces freedom, or destroys what you're talking about. So the solution isn't going to come from government. Can you get it through reducing government? Yeah. But the problem is the present government, we decided to just sign up for another 4 years, is going to be the opposite. So we need to pay attention to other parts of our society, how we can improve those, so that it leads back to a feedback loop, the eventual limitation and destruction of the more dark sides of our government. It's not going to be easy, believe me. We've really bit off a lot to chew on now. And the next couple of years are going to be really contentious problems. There are answers. Read Ayn Rand. But those answers are bitter pills. It leads to some serious issues, but there are ways of solving the problem. And they do not involve any violence. Okay, so here's some thoughts. What do I mean by education? This show is education. I try to be educational. You could share some of the ideas that I bring up and see if you can improve upon them or come up with new ones besides, etc. yourself. Let's work together to educate people so their consciousness may improve. Education leads to consciousness, but not knowledge. Just telling people and having them spit back certain facts or something is not a consciousness improvement. Education is the ability to take knowledge and apply it in ways that are new and that helps you grow closer with others who are doing the same. You see? And by growing closer with the others, then you have a new kind of political movement. The Tea Party was doing this in terms of purely economics. Now, why didn't that take hold in this particular election? Because using smarts, the Democrats, and particularly the president and his advisors, said, let's not make it about that. Let's make it about the social realities and the things that are terribly unbalanced in the viewpoints of quote-unquote political enemies. And they were more than successful in doing that, And they also used a lot of dirt and stuff. But that's always true in politics. And their opponent, Romney, did not use the right method to deal with the problem. I had a method in mind, but I couldn't communicate correctly with Romney's phone, so unfortunately that didn't work out. But the issue is that education is probably a good thing, and also getting together and, we'll say, sharing the education will be the means to what I think is the best solution. The people who need the most education are people who have the least amount of developed consciousness. They are under 28 years. But some of them are under 35. So it depends on their level of consciousness as to where they're in that process. Those people need the most amount of the rest of our assistance. Not by telling them what to do or whatever, but by sharing ideas that are relevant to their lives. Those folks have special goals and things they want to meet at their present level of life. They're young adults, and they need to have education to help them to live in ways that are more joyful and meaningful. And as they find more meaning through the things that they learn and then apply in consciousness, they then become the new generation of people who are more soul-like and who won't tolerate the kind of government that presently they voted in or voted in. So they'll change, but they won't necessarily change if they aren't helped in that change. And so that needs to happen. Be aware that almost all higher universities, higher levels of education, are highly infiltrated by socialistic, communistic, extreme progressive, leftistic thinking. And it's because those people tend to be more closed-minded and egotistical, even though they claim that they're open-minded because they're quote-unquote knowledgeable. And that's about education. Education is not knowledge, it's consciousness. The consciousness is not higher or lower than most people. But in their egotism and sometimes arrogance, they believe the opposite. And they are supported and supporting of a government that is just like them. So, universities, the media, are big backers of big government. And especially the kind of big government we have right now in the United States. But this is true of other countries. This is true throughout the world. So the things I'm saying that are relevant to people who are hearing me here in the United States is also true in other countries. And it's not that different elsewhere. Okay. So want to live as souls. We want to join together all sides of life into a more soul-focused existence. More than ever, the concepts of ageless wisdom become very important, which means that you live a life based upon your construct and understanding of what God is. You don't have to have a religious viewpoint. You may, which may not. But God is the... What you see God as becomes the embodiment of your own existence. And you know that it's right because your life becomes more and more meaningful. And you know that it's when you're wrong because you lose meaning in life and you gain sorrow and great number of forces. All right. So we have some foundation now. I mean, this is an interesting process because we really have some foundation of how we can best move our, we'll say, world towards a better place. Now, education process needs to start in leading countries. The United States is probably the most leading, but there are other countries as well that are semi-leading. And we also need to be concerned about the outbreak of greater levels of terrorism and wars and inside the violent side of what may be the outcome of irresponsibility in a darkened system of government, etc. Now, how does this sort of play out? Well, in the next 4 or 5 years, there's likely going to be a Middle Eastern war. Now, it's not just Israel against Iran. I know some people believe that. It's going to be some countries in the Middle East against other countries in the Middle East. And Israel against some countries in the Middle East, not just Iran. Now, the, we'll call it Western powers that presently have supported in the past Israel will likely not be supported. The danger of this is that the Western powers, especially the United States, but not only, have the ability to stop war. The Israelis only have the ability to start and fight war. They can't stop the war. Why is that true? Because war isn't stopped by violence. It's stopped by economic destruction and by eventually a meeting of the minds between the people who are the victors and those who are the people who lose. And so the meeting of the minds is a political thing, right? That's not war, per se. And so if we look at it from that standpoint, the Israelis can't win a war against Iran and or other countries that will join Iran because they may be able to kill a lot of people. They may be able to destroy even the government. But to win the war, they're not going to be able to convince the remaining people in those countries, which will be considered a caliphate, to give up their ideas of wanting to destroy Israel and to want to live peacefully together in the same area. So that's not possible. That can only come from countries that aren't in that area and then have unbelievable stronger ways of preventing the economies of those countries from surviving. And without an economy, no matter how much the caliphate wants to destroy something, it won't be able to because it'll be just fighting to survive itself, much as being able to destroy something else. That's where it becomes so important, and that's what's going to be lacking, because the United States almost certainly is not going to back Israel. And under the present administration. And the results are going to be pretty devastating, because then you end up with a war in which there's no end. The only end to the war would be if you kill almost everybody in maybe half a dozen countries, or everybody in Israel, and a few other countries, actually, semi-fighting on the side of Israel, are destroyed. That is a really bad outcome. And it still doesn't solve the problem. All right, so we have some grave issues that we should be concerned with, because these issues are of such magnitude. And you can see the train wreck coming. And so what can be done about it? Well, if we form a coalition that is outside of our present government with those people in other countries that may have to be outside their government, and as a united front, say we got to stop this terrorism, we got to stop attacks on Israel, and we've got to stop any subjugation of peoples in general, which includes the Palestinians, then you have a lot more likely outcome that could lead to some level of stability if war, I can't even say if, when war comes. And there will be some way of maybe forcing even the government to be responsible. Although that's hard to believe in the case of the United States, but anything's possible. You got to at least look at it from that standpoint. Do we really want 3 years of solid war? I don't know if we could tolerate with use, in some cases, of nuclear weapons. And oh my God! I mean, and the world going into deep recession or depression. And I mean, you know, Suez Canal will certainly probably not be operable, and the Straits of Hormuz. Forget about that. And, I mean, we're talking about some very, very serious problems here. So it definitely needs a view that's going to have to go way outside of governmental solutions. And this is something that normally is the province of government to solve. And yet we're not going to be, I don't think, here in the United States, able to depend upon that. Now, souls work for a common good, and they don't care what country they're in. So more soul consciousness could resolve this problem, even while the governments don't. I also want to be emphatic that 60% of the people in Iran, and probably about the same number of the people in Egypt, and in Tunisia, and a few other countries that are strongly moving towards the caliphate, would be open to having an open government and an open-mindedness, etc. It's not even the majority of people. So we have an opportunity here to try to get to those people and maybe on an individual country basis prevent this movement towards a terroristic state caliphate taking over. And that's an extremely dangerous position, with Iran probably being a new element. And it's bad news. Also, it would help by democratizing, you know, some of the Arab countries that are Muslim into becoming much freer states, with the rights of women being respected and so on, and trying to avoid Sharia law in virtually every place. But I don't know that that will be supported by the present administration. I'm going to say something that's going to really maybe upset some people, and that is that at the present time, the United Nations is not only not helpful for all the things that I talked about in tonight's show, it is extremely antagonistic to us. It is seeking social justice more than the Obama administration. And you should be aware that the very basis of the United Nations now is for a world government. It isn't as it was formed in its charter, bring each individual nation into a place where it can discuss and resolve problems with other individual nations. It wants to be an entity, power into itself. And that is government at a size that nobody will be able to tell. Remember, government in and of itself is like the necessary evil. It's not good. You have to really force it. And if it's gigantic, you can't, because it's too big. And then you're just stuck with it, and the terrible consequences ensue. I might say the United Nations is a because it's the United Nations is bad. It's saying it's bad because we want to move to government. Okay, so what can we do then? How do we change that possibly? And, you know, I think that a second kind of United Nations needs to be formed. One in which, and maybe find a different country even to put it into. I wouldn't put it on the United States ground. I wouldn't have it here. But this United Nations only includes nations, only, that are proponents of freedom and justice, not social justice, real justice, and human rights. And you can't be a member if you have a certain level of human rights violations, a certain level of injustice, you don't have true free elections, and on and on. So only those nations who fit that description are members of that United Nations. And it might be a third of the nations that are in the United Nations. He said, what good would that be? All the other nations from being there. Well, the good would be if those nations come together to do soul basis work as nations together. They try to create higher consciousness in the world. And they try to improve the creation, individual creation. And what group creations are done for the sake of improving freedom, not decreasing. So the whole idea here is that instead of wasting time and money in a place where the dark side isn't in control, you just leave and you start your own thing. Now again, that's Ayn Rand. I'm not going to kid you. That's right out of Ayn Rand, isn't it? But the point is that this. I'm not saying I don't say go bomb the United Nations. I just say kiss it goodbye, start a new one. And if our government won't do it, then the people of the country do it without the government. And just say they represent the people of the United States, not the government. And this does not, it sounds crazy, I know, but I think it would be a sound way of proceeding with what looks like is coming as a tremendous train wreck, and one that is frightening because of the magnitude and the length, if not endless, of war that we're facing. And that war is a war of terrorism, not a war of attrition and, you know, battle, as we are used to in the past. This war is so insidious that at least some people have been fooled into believing there is no longer a war when it's gotten worse than it's ever been. And people want to believe that because the government has been bad. So we've got, and that's propaganda, the issue is we've got to wake up and do something proactively, because the future seems to be barreling down. Let's look at the next 2 years if some of the stuff I'm talking about were to happen. The next 2 years are after the fight that I think we're going to have to put up with and maybe try to change. But if we put some of these structures in place that I'm talking about, that doesn't mean we're going to avoid war in the Middle East, but at least there will be something there that might be able to solve it eventually. There will be something that we will have built on a soul level that gives us a way out. And that's why I'm suggesting these things now, because it could take 4 or 5 years to get to the point where they could be exercised. Seven years from now puts us just near the beginning of 2020. by then, the third way shall be diminished tremendously, and the fourth way shall have ruined itself. The things I'm saying now will make more sense then than they do today, but unfortunately, we've got to start them today because we don't have the time to wait for that. The reason we don't is because too much of the world could be destroyed and in shambles. And too many parts of society will be damaged to the point where darkness becomes just overwhelming, evil takes over, and the planet's doomed. When evil takes over, we measure it in years to centuries at most, the time that that planet will even exist. That's a real bad thing. I don't want to see that. I don't believe my soul, or as much as I represent myself, my soul as myself, came here to see this planet go dark. It's been a very dark world. But I'm talking about just taking over the world. We're considered a terrible failure on my part and everybody's part. So let's try to do something that will mitigate what appears to be some torturous problems coming our way. We can reach a point where by self-initiation, self-creation, we together find solutions beyond anything I've said so far. Because as the veils come off and more people work together, our choices improve, options improve. And what we can't do today will be obvious maybe in a year or two or three from now. We work on it. I don't think we can do this by just going into a political party and working to change the next election. Let me explain why that's the case. At the present time, I think that we're headed towards a more dictatorial government, maybe a true dictatorship. It could be accomplished in the following way. No matter what way the Congress goes, it's going to be seen as the culprit, made so by the President's administration. If it just says, well, we're going to do nothing, then they do nothing. Well, we're going to obstruct, then they obstruct them. Oh, we'll give in to the President, let him do whatever he wants. Well, they still never contributed to anything, did they? You see, there's no winning this thing. And 2 years from now, if the same kind of political system that we presently went through exists, the House will be taken back. And with the House and the Senate under control, it wouldn't take long for the President to become the new dictator. Well, we're in a depression. We have severe problems. And it's all because of Congress. It's all because of those darn House of Representatives and the Tea Party people. Give me a chance. 4 years, 6 years, 8 years, I'll change the whole world. I'll change everything. I just have to have more power and control. I can't have these guys running around preventing me from doing what needs to get done. Those are the words of Hitler. They will be the words. So, remember this. This is not a question of left or right or any of this stuff. It's a question of light versus darkness. It's just simply that. I know it's hard to believe. That's what I think. And so, and by the way, I hope I'm wrong about this. Boy, do I hope I'm wrong. Because that's an extremely bad situation. And if successful, and there's a good chance it could be, we're in a much worse pickle, aren't we? Than you think, or I think, today. be with me. Oh, that guy's been lying about all that stuff all this time. I'm going to buy what he says. And people may vote based upon the light instead of the illusion and propaganda. But some of the things that I said that either changed didn't change. And in spite of all that, that's just government changing. I'm talking about we need to, at some point, come together for the bigger reason that we're here, which is to live as souls. It's the basis of our existence. And it takes a while for people to come to that realization. Many people don't come to it until after the 49th Earth Day, and that's just too long. We got to lower that to the 28th birthday in order to succeed, and I don't know if we're going to get there. A lot of things are against us about it, but we can try. If you have children, educate them now. Start at an early age. Bring your kids up to be creative individuals while being able to be soul conscious and work on a soul level. Bring them up so they can see a God that makes sense to them and to generally everybody. And help them to see darkness, but not to become so subjected by it as to give up and not be willing to continue on the fight. You don't want them to be demoralized, unresolute, because it seems impossible to overcome. Give them the strength of character and the optimism. Persevere, even when times are tough. I think this really helps. This, to me, is probably the great solace that we have in young people we can bring up right now. I'm going to tell you the last generation was not well brought up. We've had too many setbacks in finding our souls and letting our children be developed around that idea. And it's not the idea of going to church or being more religious, it's the idea of being more godly yourself. That's what we need to be teaching. I know that's ageless wisdom. I know that's what I do here. But if you're listening, you must buy some of it, or you probably would shut me off right now, right? You're going to some other station or some other, you know, something else to do, you know. So thanks for listening. I really appreciate that, because I want us all to work together as souls. And not to be bogged down by politics or government itself. Government is never going to solve the problems. We're here to eliminate it, so it won't be too big of a problem. You need government because on a larger level, people have to be limited in some ways so that they don't cause harm against others, especially on a collective basis. So government's needed, but in itself becomes a problem as well. We have the options. We can make it work. And we should be considering that right now. Right now. All right, so let me get even more constructive here with some examples that may bring about the changes. I already talked about dealing with children. We also need to make great choices about what schools our kids go to. First and foremost, choose schools that have free thinking, that allow the children to be creative and think freely themselves, and that do not enforce their rights over the parents. you have to move away from the state you're in if there's no such school like that allowed in the place you're at. Get away from it. Or the country you're in. If you can, get away from it. The education of children is extremely important for the next generation, right? So you've got to give them the right to be free. If you have to, and if you can, homeschool them. There's no other option. Freedom. And freedom creates. Encourage this creation in their daily life. And talk to them about the problems of the world. In terms of the bigger picture, not the small things, the big things. Let them see what's really important in life. Have them have friends that follow the same guidance. You don't have to individually pick your children's friends. You need to help your children to have a basis in general that is enlightened about what friends should be. Okay, so let's talk about some other factors. The general principle of, we'll call it, ageless wisdom, needs to be part of the people around you. Don't hold it only in like you might a religious viewpoint. Espouse it. Let people know you live your life by this. Be outspoken. And, you know, it's kind of interesting. A friend of mine, an associate as well, told me a week ago, not to ask him about his religious viewpoints, not to ask him about his political ones, because that's not any of my business. He keeps that secret from others. And I said, you know what? You have a right to do that. I have a right to ask you. If you don't want to answer, you don't have to. And I also have a right to tell you everything I want about what I think. If you don't want to hear it, you can leave. The interesting thing about that particular viewpoint is that I'm not trying to force my thoughts or my actions on others. I'm just going to be opinionated and let people know. Now, so many people are afraid to let other people know, and that is crazy. Well, what if the government finds out? They'll come and get me. Well, if you really believe that's going to happen, this is a good time to be doing something about that, right? Like letting everybody know about that problem. But that's what you believe could happen. That's a pretty serious problem, isn't it? All right. In addition, watch and fight for all the rights that are going to be attempted to be taken away from us the next few years. Keep yourself abreast of what's going on in executive orders, changes in Congress, treaties, things that we're not going to have control over. The Senate alone handles treaties, so be careful and do what you can about it. Also, make sure that you've got in your economic sense a way of staying ahead of what is going to become a series of economic crises. Everything from recession to inflation and possibly depression. Worse than a quote-unquote recession of several years ago. And in addition, the general will say state of malaise of an economy that's not going to grow beyond 2% and probably will start failing back down to zero. So you need to be doing the things that require a lot of acumen in the areas that you have chosen to earn a living in that allows you to continue to do so in periods of great, we'll say, downturns and destruction. aware that things that you need are more important than money that you have. Be aware that money may become devalued, it deserves to become devalued, and that the process of what we have considered for in years to be a way of gaining wealth is likely not going to continue to in that sort of way. There's still ways to gain wealth or have a lot of things if you need them or want them in some respect, but those methods of the past won't work because of the increased forces and decreased freedoms and likely destruction of wealth by the government. So it's going to be a real tough time. And each of us should be putting aside things that we need, including food possibly and other things, so that we can get by. That's not unreasonable. Prepare for the worst and hope for the best. It doesn't make sense to do anything other than that in the present situation, and maybe ever, possibly ever. So it's an important thing to consider. For 4 or 5 years, there's going to probably be greater and greater levels of deprivation. If you are out of work, instead of looking for a job, my suggestion is you look for a means of creating income for yourself and become more entrepreneurial if possible. If you are on the government dole, use that money to become off of them through individual enterprise. Because you may not find a job, and you may waste a lot of time and effort in doing so. I'm not saying you should completely give up looking for a job, but if times get much worse, that might be fruitless. So consider how you can become independently a business person of some sort. Have a trade, do something that will both earn a living and something that you find meaningful for yourself to do. And maybe find others who want to do the same with you. Finding a coalition of people to enter into a business is a very, very good and can be a sole way of working together. Especially when jobs may not be around. It's entirely possible unemployment will go up again and beyond levels of unemployment in the past. You know how bad it's been. All right. Also, if you're in a position where your assets are dwindling, maybe you're about to lose your house or something like that, be more creative in that respect, too. Heck, if you're about to lose your house and you can get away with it in the environment that you're living in, then out two-thirds of it or something for some purpose, which stays within the law, and that allows you to make the payments or do whatever you need to do. Be creative in that respect because you want to continue to keep the things you have because to regain them in the future may be near impossible. Okay, so conserving things is important. Let's talk about the environment. I'm looking at the time here. And by the way, we are going to go to another 20 minutes or so. And we are putting more time onto the show because the station is an audience. So I appreciate that. Okay. The environmental issues have many factors. And one of them is that you can't improve the environment if people are living hand-to-mouth and they don't have sufficient income. And if the wealthier people can usually do the most about a change in environmental improvement are having the most amount of money taken from them. So that's a kind of crazy thing. Remember this. The ability to improve the environment on a worldwide scale is a luxury. And it's people in the first world countries that have the greatest concern about it, not the people in the third world. They're just trying to eat. That's right. Trying to eat. So you look at it from this standpoint, a hierarchy of needs. I mean, Maslow came up with a segment. People look at things in terms of what's most important and what's next most important, what's next most important. The world environment may be very important to people living in a well-to-do neighborhood in California, but someone living in a hellhole somewhere in mid-Africa, you know, they're really concerned about the environment. I mean, maybe the very, very local environment they are. They want to see, you know, they want to live around trees and used to, etc. But not the entire world. The world view shrinks as your needs become more basic. Very sophisticated to have needs that the whole world in some way is going to be inundated with water and meat and this and that. So if you're concerned about the world, you need to be concerned about an economy of the world that doesn't go so low through corruption and social justice and crazy stuff that nobody can afford to pay attention to anything other than where their next meal is coming from. So we need more prosperity to be able to correct the problems that are environmental. So that's kind of the number one thing I want to bring in. But beyond that, let's say we get some prosperity among some of us. Those people who have the prosperity then can invest in the alternative means to improve the world in terms of environmental factors. Pay attention to the lower kingdoms, that means animals and plants and even minerals. Pay attention to all the aspects of what makes up the physical world and see how the forces can be reduced so all things in physical are in harmony rather than disharmony. And that leads to environmental protection, environmental development, improvement. Take an example. Give me an example. Right now, the United States has enough coal to support all of its electrical needs for about 275 years. And that's with increasing levels. That's the known coal concern. Okay. But if we burn off all the coal, it's going to add to the amount of CO2 in the atmosphere. And this thing is called CO2 sequestration, which allows us to keep it under wraps for a while. But there are other alternatives, too. Chemical alternatives to taking the CO2 and making it into other things. In a chemistry sense, can be done, it costs money, and you don't get quite as much energy out of the deal. Let's say coal ends up being 30% more expensive. It's dope. A cheaper alternative than wind farms is another. Yeah, it's not cheaper. And if you eliminate 90% of the pollution from coal, it's actually less polluting than wind farms. Because to make the steel and make the electric motors and the things involved in all that takes a lot of energy. And that actually negates some of the energy savings. So you results, it isn't a bad deal. And even if it wasn't quite equal, because of the lack of money that's necessary to support it, the wind farm is paying three times as expensive. So you're saving so much, gives you a lot more capital to use in new technologies and new ways, and brings people to a higher level of standard of living so that their needs are greater for environmental reasons, the same thing just to go out and eat, as those hierarchy comes into play. They're not worried so much about eating anymore, so that because they have a lot more money, they have other reasons to believe that this or that is important to them. And environment also to that. Let's take another example. Look at natural gas. They discovered ways called fracturing of making natural gas way, way down to lower levels of the earth. Great thing. Amount of natural gas now can be hundreds of years to replace two things. The added needs of electricity. I'm not saying, you know, it should replace all electrical needs, but the added needs we have for the future. Where coal will work for 200 years, so why the gas will work for the next 200, 300 years of time of bringing about, let's say, added things online for electricity. Plus, we could have all trucks and larger vehicles converted to use natural gas. It could be liquefied, or it could be kept natural under high pressure. But in either case, it works best for trucks because when you try to do it for cars, you can't get the range as easily. And there's other complications. So, but you say, well, what's trucks? Well, trucks, that could be 30% of the pollution from all vehicles. Wow. Now that sounds like a good idea. And the cost? Less than gasoline. The BTU right now looks like it could be less than gas, and maybe going down. Well, that's saving. Gasoline is expensive, and it's not getting better. Now, let's get to oil. What about oil? Well, the United States has huge amounts of oil, but we aren't drilling for it because it seems environmentally unfriendly. But in reality, we have very few problems in getting oil. Most of them are exaggerated for political reasons. The real problem with oil is that we're not using it as efficiently as we could, and we haven't found ways of making it even less polluting than it is. But it's still a useful fuel, and we have a tremendous amount. And the most important thing is, does it matter whether we burn Arabian oil or oil from South America, or our own? Better to do our own, because we have so much. Oh, I know, we only have 2% of the world's oil. That's actually a lot. We've discovered, if you take shale and other oil, we've discovered oil now in North America that equals about 25 to 30% of the world's oil, which in terms of the amount we use is all we use and more. We can actually sell it. We still use only our own oil, and we wouldn't have to import it. Now, why is that good? Because we're importing something that is feeding the dark side through caliphates and terrorism. It's imbalancing the other side of things. Not because we shouldn't trade and get oil from other people in any case, but we shouldn't do so when it encourages darkness to grow. We shouldn't be doing business with anybody who is doing darkness. That's a problem, and we can correct it. Now, this isn't going to happen in the next few years, but it could happen after four. And so we need to be looking at this as a plan. Only on private land and then only for a short time. It's just going to be impossible. He does it all. And Cole's almost hopeless because it's been shut down. So we need to be looking at those elements and how do we then improve the environment. I see that the technologies that are coming are going to be about 10 years out. And it will include everything from HE3 to helium-3 reactors, which are relatively safe forms of nuclear fuel. And we'll say more dangerous forms of nuclear fuel. Plus, I think that we will eventually break through the thermal energy creation part of existence. It'll have to be done probably in near outer space. And then, in about 10 years, solar panels will probably reach about a 50 to 100% greater efficiency, which will start making them make some sense, too. And I'm not talking about the fake subsidies and other stuff that right now leads people to put in solar. You know, that's just robbing Peter to pay Paul, and it doesn't really solve the problem of efficiency, which is so necessary. And if it takes more energy to make a solar panel than it saves, it doesn't make any sense. So we've got to be careful about all these hidden things, fooling ourselves about this stuff. I'm definitely in favor of us looking away from fossil fuels because even if you don't believe there is such a thing as man-made pollution per se, we are increasing the thermal load in the world, and we are definitely changing some elements of the upper atmosphere. I mean, that's true. And there's no question that the poles are melting. And it would be good if we could lower that, even if it isn't us causing it, and we should try to reverse it in whatever way we can, because as they melt, the waters rise, and people's existences are inseparable. And they may have to move, and that would be unfortunate. But it would also mean there's less land for people to live on. I don't know that that's a good thing. Not in today's world, really. Land is at a premium, and people are killing each other over it. So I don't think that's going to improve the situation anymore. Also, you know, there are other technologies that really haven't been investigated. There's wave energy, I talked about this, from the oceans. That is a great way to collect energy. It really has to do with solar energy with a little of the Coriolis effect of the Earth spinning. But together, the wave, and a little bit of the moon, too, and the waves produce tremendous amounts of energy that would supply all the electricity we need. That technology has not really been well developed, but it could be. And it's way better than wind. And it actually has even more positive effects in the world. And we don't end up with people's houses being disturbed by wind noises. And also, with the eyesores that some of these things look like. And taking up a lot of real estate. And again, it's not cheap silver. Although it wouldn't be cheap to build wave energy plants, once they would be built, they would be very reliable, and they would be able to produce huge amounts more energy than wind farms, and they'd be more regular. So those are the kinds of things I think we should be looking at, and it really is an economic issue. And if we put it in those terms, rather than an idealistic or ideological, I should say, issue, then it turns, makes more sense. And we find answers that are real instead of fake. We don't invest in things that are stupid and that encourages corruption. Corruption is just buying votes with our tax dollars. Okay, so those things, I think, are helpful, and we all could collectively be involved in this some of the things I talked about could be developed as an industry. The last thing I want to mention is alternative health. Obamacare just about destroyed alternative health. And that's going to be the thing that really solves a lot of the problems that we have in terms of our health issues. And once it's destroyed in the United States, it's going to be very difficult for it to exist anymore. Codex is a thing that's trying to get rid of it in Europe and other places. And the World Health Organization is totally behind Codex. So you should be aware, and that's the United Nations as well. All together, it's all one thing. It's an anti-alternative health issue. And if you have a disease, a chronic one, I don't care if it's cancer or whatever, the chances are that traditional medicine is not going to be a solution for over half the people that have those diseases. Whereas alternative health, for some and in some ways, not all methods, may be a great help, but it will be destroyed in the next year or two. And that's a really terrible thing. It's already in the healthcare law, I just have to read it. And I can tell you that I'm close to this. It's a very big issue for me. So many more people are going to suffer because this isn't going to exist here in the United States. The people I'm involved with are actually going to go to another country in order to offer it. But that's a terrible outcome. And it means it's going to be much more expensive and inaccessible for the average folks living here in the United States and its own country. That's a terrible, terrible outcome. Anyway, I want you to think about that. There's many other issues that are corollaries involved with that issue. If Obamacare can be at least checked or limited to some extent, that would be good. I don't think that it will be, but I'm just letting you know, be prepared for having few, if any, choices about your health care. And it's going to cost a major part of your income to have to pay for it. And you will have no choice about having it. Be prepared for that, because it's coming, and it's like a freight train aimed right at us. It's a very serious problem. It may look like it's only another packaging from insurance companies, but it almost certainly, within a few years, will become universal and mandatory universal health care throughout the entire country. And this will affect other countries too, even more so, in that same direction. Lack of choice, rationing, and forced ostracizing of many alternative health methods and supplements and Well, I'd like you to consider these things and think about how you can get involved in making those things better. If you want more information about that, contact me, miles@whylifeis.com, and I'll tell you how you can get involved. Also, I wanted to mention anybody who's going to come to hear me speak on Monday, it turns out that where I was going to speak at, which is the Pileton, was closed because of Veterans Day. So I won't be doing that on this Monday. If we can get a hold of those folks who want to attend, I will do it on a different night, but otherwise, Monday is definitely out. Well, we're out of time for right now. I hope this show has been somewhat helpful on how we could deal with the immediate future and the next 7 years, and what we can do to maybe